Narayanam namaskritya naram caiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3. Chapter 23, chapter entitled Devahuti's Lamentation, text number 13. Sava kama dukham divyam. Sava ratna samanvitam. Savadju pacha yo darkam. Mani stambhair upaskritim. Sava karma dukham divyam. Sava ratna samanvitam. Savadju pacha yo darkam. Mani stambhair upaskritam. Sava karma dukham divyam. Sava ratna samanvitam. Sava jupacha yo darkam. Mani stambhair upaskritam. Sava ratna. All sorts of jewels. Samanvitam. Bedecked with. Sava. All. Riddhi. Of wealth. Upachaya. Increase. Udarakam. Gradual. Mani. Of precious stones. Stambhai. With pillars. Upaskritam. Adorned. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. It was a wonderful structure bedecked with all sorts of jewels, adorned with pillars of precious stones, and capable of yielding whatever one desired. It was equipped with every form of furniture and wealth, which tended to increase in the course of time. Translation responsibly. It was a wonderful structure. Bedecked with all sorts of jewels.
Adorned with pillars of precious stones.
And capable of yielding whatever one desired. It was equipped with every form of furniture. And wealth, which tended to increase in the course of time. Purport. The castle created in the sky by Kardama Muni may be called a castle in the air, but by his mystic power of yoga, Kardama Muni actually constructed a huge castle in the air. To our feeble imagination, a castle in the sky is an impossibility. But if we scrutinizingly consider the matter, we can understand that it is not impossible at all. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead can create so many planets carrying millions of castles in the air, a perfect yogi like Kardama Muni can easily construct one castle in the air. The castle is described as Sava Kama Dukam, yielding whatever one desired. It was full of jewels. Even the pillars were made of pearls and valuable stones. These valuable jewels and stones were not subject to deterioration, but were everlasting and increasingly opulent. We sometimes hear of castles thus bedecked on the surface of this earth also. The castles constructed by Lord Krishna for his 16,108 wives were so bedecked with jewels that there was no need of lamplight during the night.
Amagyan Timilandasya Gunanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapidantikam Vansha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Rama
So here this section of the Bhagavatam is especially instructive to the Grihastha ashram. So there is many descriptions of how to live as a perfect Grihastha, which is important. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the Varnashram system, it is like a safety net. So if you're in the circus, has anyone ever been in the circus? You've been in the circus? Yeah, okay. Interesting devotees. So if you've been in the circus, they have a tightrope. So underneath the rope, there's a net. So Varnashram is like, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, it's like a safety net. Because you're walking back home, back to Godhead. It's not easy to get back to the spiritual world. Hands up if you find it easy to get back to the spiritual world. Not easy to go back to Krishna. That's actually quite challenging. So it is something like walking on a tightrope. When you're walking on the tightrope, you have to be extremely conscientious. You have to be extremely careful. If you're not careful, then you will fall. So it is explained that the Varnashram system is like the net. Because if you fall, the net will support you or hold you. So we have our conditioned nature and our spiritual nature, which means your swabhav. Swabhav means like your original nature, and then you have your conditional nature. Now, we can't always act at this point in time according to our spiritual nature, even though we should. We all know that is our philosophy. You're not the body, you're the soul. You're Krishna's eternal servant. But even though we know, theoretically, we are Krishna's eternal servant, still, every day we become conditioned by our body, by our mind, and we act in a material state of consciousness. So when you're acting in a material state of consciousness, there are laws or there are rules and regulations to govern your behavior so that you still progress. So that is called Varnashram Dharma. Varnashram Dharma is not spiritual. You don't see in the nectar of devotion, Rupa Goswami does not include Varnashram in one of the 64 items of bhakti. Where does Rupa Goswami discuss the Varnashram system in the nectar of devotion? It's discussed. He mentions it. End of the fourth chapter, I think it is. And there's a very small mention of Varnashram Dharma. And he specifically says, this is not an item of bhakti. But it is necessary because we are conditioned, so then we still need some Varnashram rules and regulations. We need to be governed by certain rules and regulations for our material body, for our material mind. But in and of itself, it is not bhakti. It is not devotional service. Varnashram in and of itself does not take you back to Krishna. But it is like a safety net. So you need to act in a proper way. So what's being spoken of here in this section of the Bhagavatam is the safety net. Or the Varnashram system. It means that, okay, you're conditioned, you have a material nature, you have material bodily attachment, so we'll give you rules and regulations to govern yourself, so to regulate yourself so that you can still progress spiritually. But in and of itself, it is not the goal. Because what is being spoken of here, what is Kardama Muni doing for Devahuti? What is he creating? A palace. Because when you get married, what do you need? You need a palace. So you give your wife the best you can. You're a grihastha, you have to provide for your wife and your children to the best of your ability. So you give them your palace. For some people that's very humble, for some people it's very elaborate, according to your ability, according to your resources. But Kardama Muni, he's a yogi, he's a mystic. When Devahuti met Kardama Muni, he's living in a hut. What's the place called where he is living? Bindusarovara. Where is that? Gujarat. Has anyone been there? Bindusarovara. So in Gujarat. Many good things come from Gujarat. Good prasadam. Gujarati. Prabhupada ate like a Gujarati, actually. Even though he's born in Bengal, but he didn't eat Bengali. That wasn't his style. He liked puris, chapatis, like that. Even though Bengal, they don't eat like that. So Gujarat. So Bindusarovara is there. So when she met him, he's living in a hut. And then she comes and she serves him very faithfully. So we're hearing about Varnashram instructions. In other words, how we should act according to our conditioned nature. This is not the spiritual world at this point in time. This is how to get to the spiritual world. There's certain things you have to do in this world to get to the spiritual world. This is not a description of the spiritual world itself. But if you want to get to the spiritual world, then as a wife, what did she do for 1 year? Right? She took on the disposition of the husband. What sort of family did she come from? She's Kshatriya. She's a princess. Right? When her father delivered her to the ashram, right, he brought with him thousands of soldiers. It said the earth was moving. Just the footsteps of his army. Right? So he comes to the ashram like that with like 10,000 soldiers. And Kardama Muni offers pranam. You know, Maharaj, you have come. How can we serve? He said, I want to leave my daughter here. And then Kardama looks at Devahuti and says, yes, she's very qualified. She can stay. I will accept her. So then Devahuti, she stays with Kardama. But she's a princess. She's just come from the most opulent palaces, the capital of Swayambhuva Manu, which is called Bahishmati. We can't even imagine what the opulence she's had. But then her father, with tears in his eyes, he leaves her there, right? And he says, now you will stay with the sage. So then she takes on the position of her husband. Right? She came from a palace, like unimaginable opulence, but now she's living in a hut. On the side of a lake, Bindusarovara. So she takes on. So this is the Varnashram system. Right? The wife takes on the position of the husband. Right? Generally. Right? Now in Kali Yuga, one problem we have now is that in Kali Yuga everything is different. Because the female subtle body and the male subtle body are not what they used to be. When you're talking about a traditional system thousands of years ago, men were very different. Men are not exactly like they were back then. Some men are, but many men are not. And the women are certainly not like what they were back then. So now if you just want to implode all of this directly onto Kali Yuga, sometimes we have problems. We say to devotees, you just have to serve your husband. Say to the women, just serve your husband. But half the time they're smarter than their husband. They're more qualified than their husband. This is Kali Yuga. It's not exactly like it was before. So to get everyone to act exactly according to this model, as it was done previously, it is not so simplistic. We can't oversimplify things. Prabhupada himself would make adjustments to certain things. He would not keep everything exactly like he created the Brahmacharini Ashram. That's not there. There's no Brahmacharini Ashram in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada created. So Prabhupada was adjusting gradually because Kali Yuga is a little different now. We have to think in a contemporary way also. But the basic principle that we take from the Bhagavatam is that the wife should accept the disposition of the husband. In other words, the husband has a certain amount of facility and a certain proclivity. The wife should choose accordingly. Otherwise, the wife will be dissatisfied. So she was extremely qualified, so she just accepted. For 1 year, she just served. And her body became very emaciated. Said she looked like a tapasvi, which means very austere. She looked very austere. She lost weight. And she's in the capital. She's eating very well every day. So her body was very slender and very beautiful, very curvaceous. But it was not emaciated. But then she's performing tapasya, she becomes thin. Right? She's living very simply. She's probably not wearing fresh cloth every day. In her capital, she probably she would not have worn the same clothes twice. Every day she just gets a fresh set of clothes. There she has to wash and do like that. She's probably never washed her clothes in her life. You know, every day she's down at the Bindu Sarovara, you know, washing the sari, washing the dhoti, like that. So after 1 year, and then she wants children. She has the desire in her heart. So this is another important element of Varnashram Dharma, right? If you get married, right, you have to fulfill the desires of your wife and children within reason. Right? If the wife wants children, you must give children to the wife. You cannot deny. Otherwise, you should not have got married. No. There are obligations involved. No. So this is what is being taught here. She wanted children. He may not have necessarily wanted children. He was self-realized. Now, he's a very exalted personality. He was happy living in his hut. No. But she wanted children, so he said, okay. But this is probably not the best place to conceive a child. So another point that Bhagavad Gita is teaching us, if you want to conceive a child, it has to be in the right atmosphere. The hut was not necessarily the right atmosphere. Conceive a child, you know, I don't even know if they had beds to sleep on. You know, just on the grass or on the mud or the cow dung in the hut. So he said, okay, you want a child? All right, I will create a palace for you. So then suddenly, there's a palace and it floats in the sky. And then they went to that, and she became, by his mystic power, she became potent again. She became very beautiful, right? He took on that form as well. He went in there, and then they enjoyed. And then they conceived the child, and this is an important point. Prabhupada makes this as we go into the following chapters. Prabhupada says, at the time of conception, the husband and wife must be happy. Because if you're happy, then what will happen? What will happen? Right. What sort of child do you have? The child you have is according to your psychological disposition at the time of conception. The state of consciousness you have at the time of conception, that's the kind of child you'll have. So hands up if brahmacharis, this is not for you, but hands up if you'd like a happy child. If you're going to conceive a child, you want a happy child, right? So if you want a happy child, you have to be in the right consciousness at the time of conception. Right? Everyone has to be happy and satisfied. The wife has to be satisfied, comfortable. The husband has to be satisfied, comfortable. Right? Materially, their senses are satisfied. Then a nice child will come. Quite often you see in families, when they have several children, right? When they first get together, the husband and wife, and they have a child, they're freshly married, they still like each other. So they have a child. You see, the first child is quite often very happy and very lively and very bouncy. And then sometimes you see the second and third child, they're a little bit like introverted or introspective. Because the consciousness is quite different. Quite often, I've seen it many times. The first child is just kind of this lively child who's like, you know, full of life and full of rasa. And then the second children, they become like, you know, a little bit more introspective. Probably a little bit more spiritually advanced, you could even say. Because the husband and wife are in a different headspace at that time. So you will attract according... That is scientific. So the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us. These are not spiritual things. These are material things. But if you're living in the material world, you have to learn how to do things properly. Because if you want to get back to Krishna, you have to do everything properly on the way. Now, what is the problem with Kali Yuga? The problem with Kali Yuga is that even when you try to do everything properly, it doesn't work anyway. That's Kali Yuga. Therefore, what does the Bhagavad Gita say at the end? 12th canto. Kale dosha niti rajan. It's a mess. The Bhagavad Gita says, dosha niti. What is niti? Niti means the ocean. Dosha means a fault. Kali Yuga is just, it's full of problems. Even you try to do everything properly. I was speaking to one of my friends yesterday, and he's having major difficulties in his marriage. And he rang me up and he said, I'm having some major problems. So we spoke about things. We're trying to assist each other. Not that I'm having problems, but I'm saying. I was trying to assist my devotee friend who's having some problems. So he's doing everything perfectly, but the spouse is not cooperating. So that's Kali Yuga. It's an ocean of faults. Even you try to follow everything perfectly, all the rules, all the regulations, you follow the teachings properly, the Vedic system. But people in Kali Yuga, everyone's got their own perverted desires. So it doesn't work out properly. So therefore, the Bhagavatam says, there is one good quality, you should chant the holy name. And by chanting the holy name, everything becomes reconciled. Because you can't necessarily control your material circumstance in this material world. You can try everything you want, but you can't make everything work the way you want. Does it happen sometimes in your life, everything goes upside down? Sometimes your life's going one way and suddenly it just goes upside down. There's nothing you can do about it. You cannot control your material circumstance. One thing you can control is that you can continue to chant the holy name. Kirtaniyaha Sadahari. That you can control. You can't control anything else. Even one time Prabhupada was in Amsterdam and he was on live television. You can see there's some video footage. And then Prabhupada is doing an initiation ceremony, initiating to it on live television. And his disciples had no idea what they were doing. And Prabhupada was chastising everyone. Right? On live television. Prabhupada said, where is the rice? Where are the flowers? And Prabhupada was visibly angry. Right? Live television. Prabhupada was not concerned. He was on live television. He's just telling everyone, where is this? And Prabhupada, you can see he was disturbed. Do the jagya properly. He's telling everyone, do things properly. Even like this morning, we're doing Guru Puja for Prabhupada. You know, standards keep slipping all the time. You know, when the Guru Puja begins, right, the kartals, the mridanga, the devotee doing the aarti, whoever's going to offer the gala, all these things should happen simultaneously. You see every time practically we do a Guru Puja these days, you know, someone kind of, you know, when the kirtan starts, someone runs off, oh, find the kartals, right, and then some devotee, oh, I better do the aarti, go and, you know, get my socks off and everything. It shouldn't be like that. Prabhupada's sitting there waiting, right? We should be ready every time to do the Guru Puja properly. Right? Standards drop and everything, and then during the kirtan everyone's talking to each other. You know, that's not the standard. You know, if Prabhupada was here, you wouldn't be doing like that. Right? So everyone, it's like everything becomes disarrayed. So when Prabhupada was here, he's training everyone, do it properly. So Prabhupada became quite disturbed. And at one point Prabhupada was chastising him, and you could see Prabhupada, he gets to a point where he's just like disgusted. And this is live television. So then Prabhupada just kind of leant back like this. And then there's one bhakta. He was standing next to Prabhupada's Vyasa-san. And he was chanting. He's like some new guy. He wasn't even dressed like a devotee. You know, he had long hair and, you know, but he had neck beads. And so he's chanting Hare Krishna. So he leant over to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, just chant Hare Krishna. Right? And Prabhupada looked at him and went, and then Prabhupada picked up his beads. And he said, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama. So that is the only thing we can control. We can't control anything else in this world. Everything else goes crazy half the time. But the one thing you can control, right, is your attempt to get to Krishna. So all these things, these are instructions. These are just given to us. This is not the ultimate goal of the Bhagavatam. The ultimate goal of the Bhagavatam is not to have a palace in the air, which you fly around on and enjoy with your wife. The ultimate goal of the Bhagavatam is to serve Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. But on the way there, okay, you want to have wife, you want to have kids, the Bhagavatam tells you, okay, this is the best way to do it. Right? If you want to have wife and kids, if you want to have sex life, there are standards. Right? So you have to follow the standards. This is the Varnashram system. So then, it says that this castle in the air, it was not deteriorating. No. So, what does this mean? No. Everything there was fresh. No. Is there anywhere in the material world which is like this? No. Where everything stays fresh? Right? It's called swaga. No. on the heavenly planets, it says that the demigods, they will live for 10,000 years of our time, but their bodies never get old. There's no old age or disease in Swarga, in the heavenly realm, the higher planetary systems. Right? No one gets old, so it stays fresh. Everything is fresh. And in the last year of your life, you live for 100 years, according to demigod time, in the heavenly planets. You know you're going to die, because you don't get old, you don't get disease, but you know you're going to die when your garland begins to fade. And it begins to fade gradually. And then you say, okay, now it's time. I'm about to leave. So then, at that time, the demigods, they procreate. Yeah? At that last year, they have a child, and then they bring another demigod. Right? And the demigod, when someone appears in the heavenly planets, they grow immediately to youth. There's no babies there. No one's changing nappies, and there's no... In the heavenly planets, there's no childcare system, or there's no kids running around the heavenly planets. You don't see pictures of Swarga, you don't see kids running around. Right, everyone. If you're born, you just immediately. Even in Mahabharata, you see that when Parashara and Satyavati, when they conceived, and then Vyasadeva came out, then immediately he came to the 16-year-old form. So in the higher planets, it's like this. So then the demigods, when they're in the higher planets, they conceive in that final year. Another demigod comes, and then they leave their body. And then when you leave your body as a demigod, you come back to Earth. Because in the Swargaloka, there was only 3,300 million demigods. Right? There are 33 million principal devatas, and then each one has 100 assistants. So there's 3,300 million demigods. There's not so many. On Earth, we have many more people than that. We have like a billion people, 7 billion, 7.4 billion people. But up there, there's not as many people. So when you come back here to Earth, you fall back in one of the raindrops in the Divya Snan. You know, when the sun is shining and the rain is falling simultaneously, at that time the demigods come back. So the demigod falls back to Earth, and then the drop of rain enters down into a grain of wheat or some grain. So you go into like a grain of wheat, like that, and then you're eaten by some human, and then you're transferred to his semen, and then you take birth. And then you become the demigods. So it says that the demigods are lining up to take birth in ISKCON. Where else would you want to take birth if you're going to come back to Earth? So you see many of the devotees, they're devatas. You see. And you see many of the children of the devotees, they look like devatas. You see Yogi's son, Jaikishan, and many of them. I mean, you see so many of them, so many of the kids. They look like demigods. Yeah, not your kids, we'll say. But the... but the... I'm speaking on this side of the room. But you see, like Jaikunya, like, he looks like a devata. You know, he looks like a demigod, has the features of like a demigod. So these are demigods. They're taking birth. And you see, many of these, like we call them gurukulis, many of these kids, they look like demigods, very beautiful, you know, very... mode of goodness looking children and so forth. But what is the nature of the devatas, the demigods? They have a very strong enjoying spirit. Because in Swarga, there is so much bhogaishwarya, so much aishwarya, opulence, and so much facility for sense gratification. So you see a lot of the children when they come, they're very powerful and they have a very strong enjoying spirit. And sometimes hard for the parents to rein them in. So we see that many of the kids, they have this natural attraction to Krishna. They're very attracted to kirtan, right? And they're very powerful, and they have so much ability, but they have that strong enjoying spirit. So sometimes they go off the rails a little bit. But they always come back to Krishna, even though they may deviate a little bit. So you see that this is the... position of the demigods in Swarga. Everything is fresh. So on this aerial mansion, the mansion of Kardama, you see that everything is fresh. It's like a Swarga position. So that's what it's like in the material world. But what is the problem in the material world? When everything becomes too nice, we become bewildered. And when you're bewildered, it's very difficult, Krishna says in that second chapter, Bhogaishwarya Prasad, he said, it's very difficult to have vyavasa yatmika buddhi. That means intelligence which is fixed. When everything is too nice in the material world, you become distracted. Does anyone know what I'm talking about here tonight? Right? You see, that's what happens. So for devotees, often you see devotees, their lives are falling apart. And why is that? Because Krishna is wrecking your life. That's basically what you sign up for when you come into the temple. Krishna's going to wreck everything for you. Yeah, you walk in here. I remember I walked in here the first time I walked in here. You know, Jagannath Balaprabhu was sitting over on the step there. And I looked at him. And he was just like a monk. You know, just sitting there reading Bhagavatam. And I thought, wow. I thought, this is what I want to be. Just peaceful. Just a monk. Just sit here, can read. In a beautiful temple. Everything, a nice prasadam. Like that. And I haven't been peaceful since I moved in. Last time I was peaceful is when I looked at Jagannath Balaba. But then I haven't been peaceful since. You join ISKCON, you're not peaceful in ISKCON. My Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Goswami, said to me, he said, there's no peace. I was upstairs with him in that room, just upstairs there. And I wanted Brahmin initiation. And he didn't want to give it to me. Right? He wanted me to wait another year or two for Brahmin initiation. So he looked at me very intensely. He said, why do you want Brahmin initiation? Right? And I said, to be peaceful. Because, you know, you're chanting Gayatri like that. You know, I see, because I was a new devotee, I see all the devotees chanting Gayatri. I thought, wow, it's like so peaceful and like that. I want to do that, you know, I want to be like Brahman and shit. And he looked at me, he said, do you think Arjuna was peaceful on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? And I was like, in other words, he said, you don't join ISKCON for peace. Now, if you want to be peaceful, go and be a Buddhist. Yeah, the Buddhists are peaceful. No, but we're not peaceful. Devotees cannot be peaceful. And Krishna will never make you peaceful. Because if you become complacent, you will not have any aspiration to go back to Krishna. Right? If you're complacent in devotional service, right, there's no impetus to make advancement. So Krishna makes your life difficult. So I see many of the devotees, their life is difficult, it's a struggle. Right? But that struggle is directly coming from Krishna. So then what does Lord Brahma say in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavatam? Lord Brahma says, even though your life is becoming very difficult, but still within your heart, you continually offer obeisances to Krishna and you pray. Regardless of what comes, still I will serve you unconditionally. So Krishna is testing us. Even though our lives are very difficult, but Krishna is testing, do you still serve him unconditionally? Even when it's difficult, will you still continue? So what's being spoken of here, this is Kardama Muni's aerial mansion. But the material world is not really like that. You can be up there on the aerial mansion, but the aerial mansion will crash eventually. It doesn't stay like that. So sometimes our lives become very... We all have, according to our karma, we all have good periods in our life where everything's very smooth. But if you're a devotee, you understand that's not going to last for very long. When everything's very good, you understand that's only going to be temporary. So you don't become bewildered. You just stay fixed on serving Krishna. So then Prabhupada says in the purport, where are the real mansions which are eternally perfect? It is Dwarka. You see in Dwarka, there are 16,108 mansions. And describes how big are each of Krishna's palaces. It says each palace is 16,108, because Krishna has that many wives. Each palace is 4 square miles. So that means 2 miles deep and 2 miles wide. So if you measure that from here to... That's like, it's over 3 kilometers. So that would be from here to, it's past King's Way, I think. So if you go from here to like King's Way, something like that, that's the size of one palace. Right, there's that wide. Right? And Krishna has 16,108 of those palaces. And it says that Dwarka, when Krishna was on earth, how big was Dwarka in diameter? Right? It says 96 square miles. Right? So Krishna had this city which was floating on the ocean. You know, once in a while they bring up something from the bay, you know, of Gujarat. You know, they go out there and they say this is part of Dwarka. You know, they bring some stones and things like this. They say this is part of Dwarka, the architectural things. So Krishna had an entire city floating on that ocean, right, which is 96 square miles, which that's not very big. If you've got 16,108 palaces, so that means Dwarka, technically, it should have been at least 32,000 miles wide. So Krishna fitted all of that within 96 square miles. How is that possible? Right, so we're talking about God. Right? If you want real opulence, Prabhupada says it's not in this material world. Real opulence is in the spiritual world with Krishna. Right? Every day, I turn over my calendar. You know, I have a little calendar at home, and it has like sayings on it from Prabhupada. So every day you turn over the calendar, right? And when you turn it over, Prabhupada has another saying. And then a few weeks ago I turned it over, and then Prabhupada said that in this material world, everyone is trying to enjoy with boys and girls. That's basically what the whole material world is about. Right? Every Bollywood movie is about some boy and some girl. Right? And the guy's got blood on his head and he's holding a gun. Right? But there's always a girl involved. And if you look at Hollywood, it's the same thing. Doesn't matter what the story is, it's a boy and a girl. So Prabhupada says, in the material world, everyone is looking for pleasure from relationship with boys and girls. But he said, if you want to really enjoy or actually enjoy, the real pleasure is in the relationships between Radha and Krishna. So Prabhupada said, if you want to enjoy in the society of young boys and young girls, go back to the spiritual world, where the young boys and young girls, they enjoy eternally together, but free from lust, right? And everything is ever fresh. It lasts forever. So if that's what you want, hands up if you want to enjoy with young boys and young girls. All the brahmacharis are like. Huh? Gopa's sitting at the back, he's looking at everyone else. Making sure Dwija doesn't put his hand up. Huh? So if you want to enjoy with young boys and young girls, because everyone has that desire in their heart. Everyone has that desire in their heart. Right? You want to enjoy young boys and young girls. But if you want, Prabhupada said, if you want the reality, then go back to the spiritual world where Radha and Krishna are enjoying together, young boys and young girls. But everything is eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss, and free from selfish desire. So here the Bhagavatam, in this section of the Bhagavatam, sometimes people become a little bit confused. You know, why is it teaching us about how to have perfect sex life? But it's just relative. It's just the Varnashram instruction. Prabhupada says, if you want to have children, make everything nice. So the wife's mind is comfortable, she's in the right frame of mind, so the husband's mind is in the right, and then you'll have auspicious children, you know, happy children. It actually says in the Ayurveda, at the time of conception, if the husband and wife are disturbed, the child can be born disturbed. You know, sometimes you see children are disturbed, always angry and always disturbed. Why is that? Because at the time of conception, it was not the right frame of mind. So the Bhagavatam is saying it is technical, it is scientific. That if you're going to conceive a child, then do it in this way. That's the instruction. If you're in the Brahmachari Ashram, then you can just read through it. Right? You can understand it, and then you can preach it to the Grihasthas. You don't apply it in your life. But still, we should understand all these things. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Missing the point. What's the point?
Point is, you mentioned that devotees are not peaceful in the is called.
Yeah. Well, you remind yourself by reading Prabhupada's books. Because when you read Prabhupada's books regularly, Prabhupada reminds you every day. Now, you can't be happy in the material world. Right? In the spiritual world, you can be happy. In the material world, you always face problems, always difficulties. So that's how you remind yourself, by continuously hearing the philosophy. In terms of practicing it, then that just takes practice. It takes time. Krishna beats you down over your wife until you learn it. I remember when I was a new devotee, then I was speaking to Burujan Prabhu, he's my Shiksha Guru. So I was speaking to him. I was only about, I don't know, 23 or 24 or something like that. So, like, you know, young devotee, and I was new as a devotee. So, who do you need? Which one? You need someone? It's okay. So, I was saying to Burujan Prabhu about devotional service. And then he says, when Krishna is really merciful to you, he takes everything away. Right? And he was looking at me. I was a new devotee, fresh, you know, fired up, enthusiastic. And I was just like, you know, looking at him. And I didn't understand what he was talking about. And he looked at me and said, you don't understand what I'm talking about, do you? You know, where Krishna takes everything away. And he said, just wait, it will happen. I didn't understand what he's talking about, that Krishna takes everything away. And then after a few years, then I begin to understand. And now I'm quite experienced. Krishna just takes everything away. That's what he does. So as life goes on, then you have to stay enthusiastic as a devotee for decades and decades and decades on end. You see, if you look around the temple, like, you look how many senior devotees there are, who've been practicing for more than 20 years, or more than 30 years, or more than 40 years. Not so many here, right? Because devotees lose enthusiasm as time goes by. It's hard to stay enthusiastic all the way to the end. That's not easy. Right? So you have to learn to do that, to stay enthusiastic. Because it's easy now. You're only 20 or 30 or whatever you are. It's easy to be enthusiastic because your body's full of energy, you can do all these things. But when the body starts not doing what it used to do, right, and the mind starts not doing what it used to do. You know, as you get older, sometimes you walk into a room and you can't remember why you walked into the room. Okay? But my good friend Yogi, right, how many times a day does that happen to you? Like, lots of times, right? It happens to me, I'd say, at least once a day. I walk into a room and I'm like, that happens. Seriously, it happens. And that didn't happen when I was 20 or 30. But now, hell, like, my mind's just going like, deteriorate. I can't even remember your name anymore. I don't even know where I am right now. Yeah, not that bad, but it does happen. It happens. The material, like, I know a senior devotee. He was the first devotee I ever met, actually, when I came into this temple. Jayatita Charan Prabhu. He lives over in New Zealand now. And he put something on Facebook a while ago. And he said, you know, if I can walk into a room and remember why I'm in the room, he said, I'm doing really well. He said, I'm having a good day. And it happens. You know, you get older and it's like, things happen. So everything deteriorates. So when you're young, make as much advancement as you can. Because as you get older, it does get more challenging. And Krishna will throw things at you. The only reason he's not throwing things at you now is because you're not ready. But later he will test you. You know, like in the morning, sometimes I get up and say, Krishna, I'll just do anything you want today. Right? And Krishna says, really? I say, yeah, really. He said, how about this? And then, totally ruins my life. And he says, do you still want to serve me? I say, yeah, I want to serve you. And what if I do this to you? And then, totally ruins everything. So Krishna totally ruins your life, but do you still want to serve him? Do you still want to chant the holy name enthusiastically? Because that's what it's all about. The last time Tamal Krishna Maharaj came to Mayapur, the last time before he left, he arrived in Mayapur, And he said to Radhacharan Prabhu, one of our god brothers, he said, actually, I just want to, he pointed towards Godram Dweep, towards Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house over the back there. He said, actually, I just want to go down there and just live in a hut and just chant peacefully. Because at the end of your life, that's all you want to do. You just want to go somewhere and just chant the names of Krishna. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur did, like Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur did, like Prabhupada did. But you have to get yourself to there, so you'll still be around and still be enthusiastic. It's easy now, you're in the Brahmachari Ashram. Prabhupada said, Brahmachari Ashram is the best life. Brahmachari, Brahmachari is the best life. You have three bags, right? Book bag, japa bag, sleeping bag. That's it. That's Brahmachari life. That's happy. Yeah, I lived there for 8 years in the Brahmachari Ashram. The best years of my life. You know, because nothing, you've got nothing, and no anxiety to serve Krishna like that. But then you have to maintain, if you go out of the Brahmachari Ashram, then you have to still maintain your enthusiasm. You know, when you have your moustache, and your, you know, five kids, and you come around to Janmashtami in your Mercedes Benz, then you still have to be enthusiastic at that time. So it's easy now. It's not really a Brahmachari class, is it? That's why Gopa doesn't invite me for the Brahmachari classes. Sometimes I say, I'll come and enliven the Brahmachari. She said, no, it's okay. But the point is, if you can stay Brahmachari your whole life, then fantastic. Yeah, we give you blessings to do that. But if you cannot, either way, it doesn't matter which ashram you stay in, but you have to stay enthusiastic over the decades, because it's not easy to stay enthusiastic continuously in devotional service. Does that answer your question? I can't even remember what your question was. Any other question or comment? If you haven't got the association of devotees, it's much more difficult to stay enthusiastic. It's more difficult. That's why it is recommended we stay in the association of devotees. But it is not impossible. You can remain enthusiastic, but it's more challenging. So sometimes Krishna arranges that you are away from the devotees, so you cannot associate with them so easily. But then you should always make arrangements that you can regularly go back and be with the devotees again. Because sometimes you have to. For service, you become a little isolated sometimes. But then in your heart, you're always meditating, I want to be back with the devotees again. And you make arrangements. So don't stay away for too long. Or don't put yourself in a position where you're away for too long or too far away. But if you are, then you have to be very determined, very enthusiastic. Just like Nisringa Maharaj. You know Nisringa Maharaj? Bhakti Bigash Nisringa Maharaj. He preaches in China. So one time, early 90s, he was preaching in China. He didn't see a devotee for 1 year. 1 year. He was in some city in China by himself, preaching. 1 year, did not see a devotee. Like that. And then when he came back, he came to Vrindavan. We were there, VIHE, all the devotees, then he came, and he was telling us. He said, I've just been thinking for 1 year. I just want to see the devotee, I just want to be the devotees again. So sometimes you have to do like that, or sometimes life goes like that, but don't make it permanent. We're not strong enough. You know, Nisringa Maharaj is very powerful. So, you know, but even for him, he said it was very austere. But for us, don't attempt those kind of things. Unless Krishna makes you do it. So, any other question? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.